After a long fight, marriage equality is now the law of the land in Florida. Governor Rick Scott begins his second term, and despite the cold weather, the city's mayor's race is heating up. Just some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Just ahead, we've got all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, our own commentator Jay Solomon with ideas to spark up downtown. That's coming up later in the hour. But first, of course, it is Friday, and that means it's time for our Media Roundtable, a group of all-stars today as we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dan. John Burr, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal, is here.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Fred Matthews, who blogs at The Examiner.
Good morning.
Hey, Fred. And columnist A.G. Gankarski of Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
Guys, a pleasure as always to have you together in the studio. Lots of news to talk about, so much so, in fact, that we're going to spend most of the hour with our roundtable by popular demand. And let's begin with the top story of the week. Same-sex marriage arrived in Jacksonville Tuesday with a judge officiating in his chambers and others offering free sidewalk weddings as pressure continued for court workers to resume courthouse weddings. Now, Circuit Judge Lance Day this week took it upon himself to marry same-sex couples, just as a group of attorneys who sued to end the state's ban on gay marriage warned that they are also going to sue Duval County Clerk of Courts Ronnie Fussell over his decision last week to just stop performing all courthouse weddings, Fussell saying that rather than marry same-sex couples, they'd rather not do any weddings at all. This is the top story of the week, and we want your calls. Let us know your thoughts about marriage equality in Florida and the pending legal action over the decision to end courthouse weddings here in Duval. The number to join the show, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. We also welcome your Facebook comments. John Burr, let's begin with you. This is the biggest story of the week, one that's generated headlines around the country. Is once again, Jacksonville's in the national spotlight for a controversial call made over a social issue. Your thoughts?
Yeah, my first thought is I wish we would get out of that spotlight. We seem to slip into it every month or so. But, you know, it's interesting to see. We were just talking about this. You know, those of us who've been in town for a while, we're pretty shocked, I guess is the word, to see that, you know, the marriages that took place publicly this week were no big deal. They just kind of spontaneously happened. There were no protests about it. And Jacksonville went along with the rest of Florida in accepting these same-sex marriages.
Fred Matthews, public opinion on this in less than 10 years has shifted dramatically now, with the majority of Americans saying that they are fine with same-sex marriage. Yet we continue to see, it's been striking to see here in Jacksonville, public officials, their stance on it, and in Florida, increasingly at odds with the majority of the country.
Well, I mean, they continue to be behind the curve a bit, and this issue in Jacksonville is just par for the course. You have to wonder what the employees who may be gay or lesbian who work for the clerk of the office now know what their boss actually thinks of them by taking this action. The other part is, look, you are a public official. You are elected public official to represent all of the folks who elected you and to handle their paperwork. You don't get to make a decision based on your personal beliefs, especially when you didn't declare them when you were running for office. This is one of those you should have declared. And again, clerk of the courts, he's got to handle the paperwork of that runs through the court system. So this says, to me, it says that, hey, if some paperwork passes through his office and he doesn't particularly like it and knows something about you, your paperwork could get lost because this guy has let his personal opinion interfere with his duties as clerk.
549-2937 to join the Friday Media Roundtable. Dan Scanlon to give fair voice to Clerk of Court Fussell. He stopped commenting on this due to the fact that litigation is almost certainly pending. But he did tell the Florida Times Union that he does not feel comfortable performing any weddings that are not between a man and a woman, and that enough of his staff felt that way that they decided the best course of action was just to stop doing weddings.
Right. The comfort level of some of his staff was the reason given. But then, again, as Fred was saying, that said, Judge Lance Day, as he conducted two of those weddings, stated that the courthouse should be open to everyone. Albeit some restrictions these days on news media being allowed to do things inside of it. But that said, it should be open to everyone. It is an open door policy once you get past security. And there was certainly enough indication in that courthouse of people applying for those wedding licenses. Don't forget, though, a week ago, we all started receiving emails from a number of Northeast Florida clerk of court saying that they would not be performing any wedding ceremonies and only issuing licenses because of their discomfort or other concerns about what was coming with same-sex marriage.
A.G. Gankarski, clerks of court aren't legally required to perform courthouse weddings. It's simply been a longstanding custom for people that can't afford to get married anywhere else.
Right. And this is something, when I talked to Bill Bishop the other day about this issue, he pointed out that it's an equal accommodations issue here. They have a 100-year tradition of the courthouse weddings. All of a sudden, they stop it because they don't like some of the people that are getting married. And that's kind of ridiculous. I mean, given that, you know, you look at the history of straight weddings, every straight wedding in the courthouse has been one that has been well advised, yet they performed the ceremonies. Many of them led to divorces, you know, and so on and so on. So, you know, it really is a denial of, you know, existing privileges, you know, just solely based on sexual orientation. And if Fussell really felt this strongly about it, he would have resigned. You know, what he's trying to do is basically maneuver around what is now accepted law.
Hey, and John Burr, it's been striking, as you said, to note, Florida now, I believe, the 36th state to legalize, adopt marriage equality. Mm-hmm. So the majority of states now have gone in this direction. It's clear where the trend line is going.
Yeah, and it's become a legal issue, which has gained momentum, and it's really inevitable that for legal reasons that all the 50 states are going to eventually and probably this year go that way.
Yeah, and the pressure will continue to build, Fred, on the Supreme Court to settle this issue one way or another once and for all, because couples, if they move from one state to another, their marriage may or may not be recognized, depending on where they live.
And that's where everybody's headed. I mean, the states, clearly, this is one of those issues in which the states, primarily southern states and some conservative western states, cannot make up their minds. You've got too much of a mishmash throughout the country, and that's where the Supreme Court comes in. That's where it should do its best job. And I don't think this is going to be one in which they'll be able to duck around, because it will be so clear-cut mm-hmm. that they have to make okay. some national ruling that will be law of the land.
Lots of go ahead, John.
Well, that's a good distinction. I mean, this isn't happening because, you know, people around the country are suddenly woken up and had a moral awakening about this issue. They're being forced by the federal courts to do this.
That's true. And we do want to give fair voice to all points of view on this program. A sizable percentage of constituents around town are not in favor of this change. Mm-hmm. Dan Scanlon.
Well, there's one sad part to this, too. Both Clay County and Duval County have had a habit of the past few years of doing a mass Valentine's Day civil ceremony. In Clay County, they do it in a beautiful park along the river, and in Duval County, they do it on the stairwell of that wonderful new courthouse. And that's gone. Now, if you're having a civil wedding and you do it in the arbor, we have a room built and set aside at the Duval County Courthouse for this. That room now remains taxpayer paid for and unused. The happiness of having a ceremony there is gone, because if you can't afford a church wedding, at least you had the arbor, at least you had something pretty, and now you've got nothing but a piece of paper, and then you got to go find someone to do it in an office.
It'll be interesting to see if the litigation that's expected forces the courthouse to go back to putting that arbor in place. AG.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, people who have agitated for, you know, marriage equality have you know, basically said, well, how much money has Pam Bondi spent fighting this? You know, how much money is Ronnie Fussell going to spend fighting this? How many resources of, you know, finite resources of Duval County are going to be used fighting this? What is, you know, clearly inevitable? And, you know, you've got a public accommodations issue again. And, you know, basically the people who oppose marriage equality, you know, it doesn't have to happen in their church. But when you come to like a public edifice paid for by gay and straight taxpayers, a $500 million courthouse in a blight zone, you know, made with the finest edifices, they should create a space and create room in their hearts to do what's right.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, as we discuss the biggest stories of the week, and what a news week it's been. With our Friday Media Roundtable, our group of all-stars in studio today, Fred Matthews, A.G. Gankarski, Dan Scanlon, and John Burr, what are your thoughts about marriage equality coming to the Sunshine State? Give us a call, 549-2937, to join the show. Michael on the West Side is with us. Hey, Michael, good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you, Melissa, for taking my call. My comment is for the clerk of court is, if he went down this road, that means that we can now discriminate as far as if somebody's religious, is not letting them work for the courthouse, because if someone's going to use their religion just all willy-nilly, then there should be a vetting process that anybody that works, that's affiliated with the courthouse, should not have any religious ties, per se. I mean, is this the road he wants to go down? Because as far as I'm concerned, this is a very legitimate reason for us to say, okay, yeah, if you're a strong religious, with strong religious convictions, you can't work for the state because we can't trust you to do the right thing when it comes down to it. Thank you.
Michael on the West Side, thanks for the call. Of course, many people have strong religious convictions of different stripes. I think most fair-minded people would agree, John, that you can't have a litmus test on what someone's private beliefs are when hiring them for a public position. At the same time, what are your thoughts about this argument that people have been posing this week, that a person's private religious beliefs can't be imposed on a large, diverse, multicultural population?
Well, I agree with that. And, I just wish, you know, that people would take the, if they're Christian, take the teachings of Christ literally and be inclusive of people that are different from them and try to live in peace.
Dan Scanlon.
You know, there's something called the right thing and the moral thing that has nothing to do with religion. It's just what is right, what is proper to do. And Fred's comment earlier about coming from the heart is true. You're talking about a marriage here, and if these people are willing to commit and commit publicly, as some of these people were this week, and come out of the closet to the whole world, then that's a pretty strong sense of their desire to do this. And also, don't forget, our story in the Times Union did indicate that we could see legal action as soon as today.
As soon as today.
Yeah.
Fred Matthews.
I imagine the spectacle of the clerk of the court, who's supposed to be handling paperwork, now having to handle his own paperwork, to waste taxpayers' dollars on that. I mean, that's the central core issue here, folks, is that Ronnie Fussell, a former president of the city council, a representative of all of the folks here in town, has decided he is not going to represent all the folks in town, but is going to represent his own opinion. And that's what's at the core of this here. You know, wasting, as AG has indicated, wasting dollars, going to court. This just doesn't make any sense.
Well, Ann on the north side. Go ahead, Ann.
Hi. I think I've heard that there's money involved in this, in his decision. Was it $90 per wedding ceremony that he was collecting? And it's about $180,000 that will be out of his budget now. That's all.
And thanks. Go ahead, Fred and AG.
Just a point here. All we're talking about is leaving the room open so that you can have a ceremony at the courthouse. Mr. Fussell or his staff does not, and correct me if I'm wrong, they don't have to conduct the ceremony. They don't have to do anything. It's just a room that's open for folks to have a ceremony. He doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to be there. He doesn't have to acknowledge it. That's the issue at hand here.
It's been striking, too, to see AG, the way other judges and attorneys have stepped up and said, provided a different sort of narrative saying, we believe the courthouse is open to everyone, and they've sort of stepped in to meet this new demand.
Yeah, I mean, there have been attorneys like Belkis Plata, John Phillips, the Jacksonville Bar Association's come out and offered to do it pro bono. All of these things are positives in terms of that community and that community wanting to get married. You know, that being said, you know, what is really at discussion here is, you know, these people, you know, having the right to get married as people have, you know, with the ceremony, because, you know, wedding ceremonies can cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And if people are poor, people don't have the money to do it, people don't want to commit the resources to it, you know, it's been an amenity that the state has extended for decades. And, you know, Ronnie Fussell's position looks churlish. You know, it's reminiscent of, you know, decisions made in the past, you know, sort of like, you know, 50 years ago, you know, public pools are integrated. So, you know, the city of Jacksonville just closes down the pools in Springfield and places like that. It's that kind of decision. It's an atavistic, backwards decision that has brought Jacksonville again global opprobrium.
We're getting tweets about that. Here's one from a listener. Fussell's decision reeks of the city's pool integration decision from the past. Have the conservatives of Jacksonville lost the culture wars? Dan Scanlon.
Well, you know, what the last caller and was also mentioned about the cost. We've also had some taxpayer cost with the previous clerk of court who wanted to extend and run for a third term, and I attended his court hearings on that. So there's some taxpayer cost to try to fight that. And then, of course, Nassau County's clerk of court recently was chastised by the previous chief judge for spending lots of money on a decision that went against him in court. So there's a history in Northeast Florida of using taxpayer funds to go against the public sentiment.
Tom in Avondale. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I think one thing that has been a big reason why gay rights and same-sex marriage has become so legal is that the issue of civil rights of these couples has been divorced from the moral issues more than ever. And it just seems that our city officials are ignoring the fact that this is a civil rights issue. And for better or worse, their personal morality and beliefs have very little to do with what their public function now has to be.
Tom, thank you for that. That's Tom in Avondale. John Burr, you wanted to add something?
Well, I think Tom is saying a lot what a lot of people on this panel are saying. It really is a moral issue. And, you know, I've heard the argument that, you know, well, you know, since the legal community is stepping up and doing these marriages for free, you know, it doesn't really matter if the clerk of court reverses himself and starts doing weddings again. Well, I really disagree with that because, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, when all the hubbub has died down, will those lawyers still have time? Will those judges still have time to do free marriages? I doubt it. So that, you know, the issue really just has to be overturned, and we need to move forward.
More tweets coming in. Mickey tweets the show, "Don't bash Jacksonville due to the actions of Ronnie Fussell. It's just time to vote out," she writes, "another bad actor." Kenny tweets the show, "If the clerk of courts loses the legal challenge, he should be personally liable for expenses since he's not executing a legal process." Let's go to Rick in Palatka now. Rick, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. The arrogance of this individual is amazing to me. This is a public building. This is law. He has no right to dictate anything at all. It's amazing to me. This guy needs to step down. We need to get him out of there, because if we allow that sort of behavior to continue, it just indicates what's really going on in this country across the board. That's pretty much all I got to say. He needs to be fired by the mayor. He needs to step down. Small-minded person. Horrible. Thank you.
That's Rick in Palatka, and lots of folks waiting on hold to weigh in on marriage equality. But as Rick pointed out, he wants local public officials to, you know, say where they stand on this. And that brings us to our other big story of the week. Despite these snow flurries that fell around town Thursday, did you guys see those, by the way? I looked all
didn't
around
see
it. And didn't
I posted
see
video
them.
On Jacksonville.com of the snow, but it was dandruff fine. We forgot one more guest in the studio, Fred Matthews' gloves.
Oh, yeah. Yes, Fred.
See them
Fred,
on video if you're watching. Yes. If you're monitoring online, look at those gloves.
They're Fred. Eligible to be clerk of court.
Yes. Oh, I didn't mean that.
Well, it was a chilly day, but nonetheless, excuse my cliched segue. The Jacksonville mayor's race is heating up this week. Republican candidate Lenny Curry snagged two big endorsements from both Senator Marco Rubio and Texas Governor Rick Perry this week. Team Curry hitting the streets over the weekend to bolster their support. Meanwhile, incumbent Mayor Alvin Brown continues to enjoy high approval ratings as he seeks re-election and is hoping that the successful conclusion of a pension reform deal will bolster him. And the other candidate in the race, City Councilman Bill Bishop, is drawing support from an interesting coalition of Democrats, independents, and moderate Republicans. So right now, we're going to discuss the mayor's race. Let us know your thoughts as attention turns to that contest with the first election coming in March. The number to join the show, 549-2937. AG Rick and Palatka demanded to know where the mayor is on marriage equality, the clerk of courts. As yet, we're not getting much out of Mayor Brown's office or Team Lenny Curry on this hot-button social issue, as both candidates seek a middle path on these contentious issues as they vie for the mayor's office.
Right. You know, both Brown and Curry have essentially said the same thing. It's Fessel's prerogative to do what he wants in office. The voters elected him to do a job. You know, that being said, you would expect Curry to take that position, especially considering, you know, Fessel's a fellow Republican. Mayor Brown taking that position across party lines is more questionable, especially for the activists in the street team that pushed him over Mike Hogan last time. I mean, remember what happened in last election was a late surge, young voters from the urban core basically saying they wanted Alvin Brown, they thought he represented change. This isn't what they voted for. This isn't what they expected. They expected him to take a stand and not, you know, wait a week and let it fester and maybe take a stand, as he did with the Mocha Gate, but to actually take a defensive stand, you know, in their interest, basically representing Jacksonville in the 21st century. You know, this points to a larger issue, which is, you know, that Brown, despite the high approval ratings, you say, I think the polls from October at this point, you know, Brown's basically taking positions that sound like Curry's. It's not a Republican primary. It's a unitary election. And, you know, Curry is going to have the Republican vote, the social conservative vote on lock. He's going to have these endorsements. You know, Marco Rubio, Rick Perry, you know, George W. Bush is coming to town next month. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's an endorsement there. And, you know, Alvin Brown saying, I'm going to run a nonpartisan campaign. He doesn't have Peter Rumble on his side this time. He doesn't have, you know, the institutions on his side this time. He doesn't have somebody like Mike Hogan running against him who, you know, anybody who knows Mike Hogan knows that Hogan's biggest regret is not going negative in that campaign. Lenny Curry is not going to make that mistake. Alvin Brown needs to get ready.
On the other hand, though, you've got two Republicans running, Lenny Curry and Bill Bishop, who theoretically could split the Republican vote. Alvin Brown is obviously being advised to be cautious and somewhat conservative as he campaigns as a Democrat in a Republican-leaning metropolitan area. John Burr, your thoughts about his strategy?
Well, you know, if you remember back, the mayor was not... It did not endorse the human rights extension of the human rights ordinance, which would have given protection to gays in the city. Was silent on that issue, and that also alienated people in the Democratic Party. So, you know, I don't know where the mayor stands on same-sex marriage, and I wouldn't be surprised if he is negatively disposed to it.
Fred Matthews.
Well, based upon his conservative religious theology, he would have to fall in opposition to it because that's where that's how he campaigned, that's how he's governed, and he consults regularly with the religious community. So he has to fall there. But can he say it publicly? Would he say it publicly? I doubt it. I doubt if we're going to get that out of him here. And you know, again, we're seeing sort of a repeat of last summer's gubernatorial campaign where Rick Scott came out with all the stuff all summer long, just beat Charlie Crist to death, introduced himself, wife. We're seeing the same pattern. Here, I am Lenny Curry. I am Lenny Curry's wife. Hi, I'm Lenny Curry's father. And everybody's out there, and we don't know who's running. We don't even know if many people watching this couldn't know that there's an election in 3.5 months coming up here. And that's the thing we're looking at. The mayor's base, the inner city that did come out the last time to run for him, they don't know that there's an election coming. Be honest with you, except for the few District 8 races that are happening in zip codes 7, 8, and 9, they don't know there's a mayor's race going on. And by the way, there's another Republican, Omega Allen, is running in the primary. She's an African-American, very good looking, very well dressed. She's doing a great Facebook campaign. And these things are going to take away from the base. So we're all kind of waiting to see what the mayor's going to do or not going to do here. But he's got to get going because this will be over.
Now, let's talk about the fact, too, that this race is drawing heavy hitters from beyond Jacksonville. Dan, AG, the state GOP very much wants to put the city's mayorship back in Republican hands. At the same time, the state and National Democratic Party has had their eye on Alvin Brown for some time, and they're going to give him all the support they can. As you said, AG, we may see George W. Bush come to town on behalf of Curry. I think it's a safe bet we might see Bill Clinton come to town on behalf of Alvin Brown.
But my question is, we've already seen some very heavy-hitting commercials from Mr. Curry. We've already seen some heavy-hitting support from Mr. Curry. We've heard nothing from the mayor. It's a two-sided question here. Where's the mayor stuff? Is he going to hold off until Curry has expended all of his heavy hitters and people tend to forget and then hit us with the support, which would then be that late momentum? Or has Curry just expended his heavy hitters too soon?
Well, let's go back to 4 years ago. At those last two weekends before the election, Mike Hogan was really nowhere to be seen. And people came in from out of town and worked those neighborhoods like there was no tomorrow. There was a huge influx of on-the-ground support for Alvin Brown on those final weekends. A.G. Gankarski, can we expect to see that again?
Well, given that Brown has spent the last 4 years squandering, his partisan support, he didn't do anything for Chris last time, for example, and the HRO we mentioned, I don't expect the same level of, late period agitation on his behalf. If he brings in national people, then, Curry can say, hey, you broke your nonpartisan pledge. Regarding the Brown campaign, it seems to be in disarray. I mean, where's the campaign manager? Where's the campaign website? Where's the campaign Facebook page?
Where's the campaign?
Exactly. Lenny Curry is not Mike Hogan. Lenny Curry has been angling for this for a couple of years. Lenny Curry's been talking to people in boardrooms. He's been talking to people in neighborhoods. Yesterday he went to the Jacksonville Brotherhood of Firefighters and talked to them. That's a constituency that, feels ignored by Alvin Brown. Alvin Brown didn't bother with them since 2011. Lenny Curry has courted that support, and, he might get them, not to endorse. He might get them to endorse him because, he's actually having these conversations, and he's making a priority of Northwest Jacksonville, and he's making a priority of the African-American community and making inroads and, representing a difference from the Mike Hogans and the Ronnie Fussells of the world.
Laura emails the show, I'm leaning towards Bill Bishop, and I think he should run as an independent. Bill, let's not leave Bill Bishop out of the conversation. He's the only candidate in the race who's been willing to voice his opinion on controversial local issues, and he's drawing an interesting coalition of supporters.
Well, certainly, as a reporter, I can tell you in a newsroom, any time that there's an issue that needs to be discussed on the city council level, Bill Bishop has been willing to discuss it and is very friendly about doing it. So he's certainly, that's an opinion that I have, that he's an accessible politician versus some of the others we're talking about.
Well, I guess the conventional wisdom is that, while Bill Bishop is a viable candidate and a legitimate candidate, he's not going to last against the other two. And is that a fair assessment? Well, maybe not at this point, especially given how the mayor is not really running yet. But I think the conventional wisdom is a strong force in this race.
Fred Matthews.
Well, yeah, and there's just the thing that Bill's got to move through. I think he's a good candidate and obviously a good person individually. He's always been accessible on city council. And quite frankly, you wouldn't know he's a Republican unless you saw the R behind his name. I mean, it's just that kind of folks. But I just, Lenny Curry's got the juice here. He's got the money. He's got the organization. He's got the juice. And the Republican Party really doesn't care that much for anybody else in the race. Here locally, exactly right. They just don't. And Bill has got to, in order for Bill to become a factor in this race, he's got to step up and step up hard. And I just don't think that's part of his character.
Let's go now to your calls about the mayor's race. Rick at the Beaches. Hey, Rick. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Well, I don't think some people, at least I think, we're seeing Jacksonville put on the national stage to find out how the Republican and Democratic platform is going to be formed by using Jacksonville as the sounding ground. Mayor Brown, I think, has really destroyed his whole reputation. One of your commentators said that, you know, he's listening to the religious group, what they want to do. I think he's violating the Constitution. I thought there was supposed to be a separation of state and church. If he wants to be a mayor, he represents all people, just not the clergy and people who go to those churches. But I think we're on the national scene with all the heavy hitters coming in to see what platform is going to be to be looked at for the national conventions. Thank you.
Rick, thanks for the call. Gary on the north side. Hey, Gary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thanks.
I'm an African-American, and the last campaign, I was out campaigning for Mayor Brown, and look like it now, look like he's trying to put his campaign on the pension. And if he gets this pension, I think he thinks he's got it. But there's a lot of hardworking city workers have been affected by his mayorship, been laid off. And I don't think he has the backing that he may think he has.
Gary, I guess we'll have to see. Thanks for that call. And let's go now to Steve on the south side. Hi, Steve. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. I wonder if I could get the panel's assessment about Lenny Curry's byline, "I am not a politician," or actually not his, but everybody else speaking for him. The man has been everything from secretary to, I think, president of the Florida, the state Republican Party, and his byline is, "I am not a politician." And isn't that just a little bit too transparent and basically open to critique? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for that, Steve. Yes. Let's talk about that. A.G. Gankarski.
Yeah, I mean, that's something a lot of people brought that up, that Curry, you know, keeps claiming he's not a politician, and it's belied by the fact that he's running a very tactically successful political campaign. I think you have to look at that phrase in terms of nuance. I mean, Lenny Curry's talking about things that other politicians aren't. I mean, he gets on Twitter and talks about, you know, C.S. Lewis and N.T. Wright and Mother Teresa. I had that conversation with him on Twitter last night. He's talking about football. He's talking about things. He's actually talking to people. So, you know, in terms of being the soundbite scripted politician, you know, that's what he's saying. He's not that. You know, does
is that going to fly, though? Will people believe that?
I think he's probably going to end up dropping that messaging quietly because it's obviously, you know, not going very well. It's not being seen as credible. It's something that his political rivals can pounce upon. So I think that's going to be faded out. But I think that's what he was getting at with that phrase.
Dance,
I mean, one of his latest commercials has him seated at a desk with the city skyline behind him. And all I can think of when I see him and that is this is the former Republican chairman. This is a guy in an office in a three-piece suit. And to me, that says politician. That says businessman corporation. That doesn't say folksy homie, despite the fact that his wife's commercial obviously has her sitting on a lawn. So, you know, that's the image I'm getting, is the big business guy backed by a national organization.
But the vast majority of folks don't know that. The vast majority of people who look at this and look at Lenny Curry, they don't have any idea who this guy is.
They don't know he's the former
chairman?
They
don't know. They don't know. And this far out from it, they just got through an election. People are weary of it. Now we're talking about a city election that will draw maybe 25-30% of the electorate out to vote in April. They have no idea who Lenny Curry is. So whatever he tells them he is right now, for the vast majority of folks who are looking at this, is what they'll have to accept until the real guns come out in another month or so. But this is very effective. I mean, we're no longer electing a politician as mayor. We stopped that after John Delaney came in office. We're now electing CEOs of a multi-billion dollar corporation. And who do you want to run the corporation? That's what we're doing here. We proved that with Delaney. We did it again with John Payton. And now we're doing it again. And Lenny Curry is a CPA, isn't he?
Yep.
All right.
Meanwhile, another tweet from a listener. Don't forget that polls show Mayor Brown has strong support among white male Republicans because he didn't raise taxes. Let's go to Linda in Deerwood. Linda, go ahead.
Yes. Good morning. I just want to point out, and what Fred said is true. Maybe people aren't paying attention, but I don't think we have to settle for that, because anybody who has a phone can Google and see Lenny Curry. Lenny Curry was the head of the Republican Party. Are you going to tell me that he wasn't in on strategy meetings about not taking Medicaid expansion, not expanding the rail system here in Florida, that Governor Scott declined the money? You know, that he wasn't in on the sessions when Governor Scott decided he was going to sue to have drug testing for people. Let's just ask the people of Jacksonville not to be asleep at the mall. Do your due diligence in advance. Mayor Brown may not be, you know, warm and fuzzy because we actually have his record as mayor to judge him on. But look at Lenny Curry as part of the Republican machine for years that has given Florida what we have right now with split decisions and a lot of people not being represented. Let's not be asleep. Let's actually be good citizens and do our work in advance and not just look at the commercials. Thank you.
Linda, thanks for the call. Lots of calls on the mayor's race. But when you talk about the state Republican Party, we do need to make note that Florida Governor Rick Scott began his second term Tuesday with a call for bipartisan cooperation and a commitment to make the state a worldwide leader in creating jobs. Scott taking the oath of office on the steps of the old Capitol in front of a crowd of thousands. And the guest list included Governor Rick Perry of Texas and Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. Of course, we mentioned Rick Perry endorsing Lenny Curry in the local mayor's race. As Scott begins a second term, John Burr, our business editor, he's actively trying to court business and siphon it away from other states and bring it here to Florida.
Rick Scott has a laser focus on economic development, and to him that means selling Florida to corporate America. And he's done a pretty good job, and he's going to continue doing that. And frankly, I think that's why he won the election, because nobody knows what Charlie Crist stands for, and everybody knows what Governor Scott stood for. Now, they may agree with it, they may not agree with it, but he's there, and he's going to be there for 4 years trying to bring every corporation he can possibly bring to the state of Florida.
Well, yeah. Where did Rick Scott start his election campaign? At one of Jack Hanania's Jacksonville auto dealerships, and carefully orchestrating to have many employees in the background waving signs so that no matter where we looked as news media, we had a jobs sign. And that's all the governor talked about at that first, was bringing jobs, and then touting his successes, talking about the port, talking about many other things that were job related.
Including Jack's port. Fred Matthews, yes, the governor spent a lot of time in Jacksonville. We'll have to see if that continues in his second term.
Well, I mean, he's got a clear path. It's nothing like a second term. You have a clear path now. The 700,000 can go out the window, because you can achieve that, 700,000 jobs and more. And his appeal to all the folks in the New England states to come on down, bring your business on down to Florida will ring true. And when you have Governor Rick Perry there with you, who's also appealing to the folks in California to leave California, come on to Texas and bring your business here, it rings through here. But who got the soundbite of the day? And we were just talking about it. Now, Mayor Alvin Brown, for some reason, the media here found a way to get Mayor Alvin Brown getting endorsing the governor at the governor's inauguration. Strange, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, and savvy, I would think, on the part of the mayor's staff to make sure he was part of that narrative.
To borrow a phrase from Jay-Z and Rihanna, Rick Scott runs this town. You know, you can see it because, you know, Alvin Brown had that story out. We have close cooperation with the governor's office, et cetera, et cetera. You saw that in the Times Union a few days ago. And, you know, that's, again, something that Democratic partisans are going to take pause at. You know, that being said, Rick Scott in a second term, he's not going to owe anything to, you know, the right wing of the Republican Party anymore. Rick Scott can govern as a CEO. I mean, the gay marriage issue is done. You know, and there's really not much else that he's, you know, got to account to the religious right in the state for. So, I mean, I could see a very centrist Republican governor here, not unlike what Charlie Crist would be.
Eric on the South Side, thanks for calling this show. Eric, you're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. Your panel may recall the basketball game out at Mayport a couple of years ago that was washed out, cost the taxpayers.
On the aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
It cost every man, woman, and child in Duval County 90 cents. Bill Bishop on
You measured it down to the penny, Eric.
Well, I don't know who's laughing. You know, this is serious money.
No, it is.
You know, this is no joke.
Right.
90 cents here, a dollar here, it adds up. Bill Bishop on TV said, well, everybody who went had a good time. That convinced me to go down to Mr. Holland's office and no longer vote. I'm a citizen, lifelong of Jacksonville. I go way back, Tommy Green and all the shenanigans, and I'm done. When politicians can get away with that kind of skullduggery, I mean, I think the middle is lost. But, thanks.
So you're not going
to
vote? Wait a minute. So
no, I'm done voting.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Eric.
Don't be sorry. I don't want to be responsible for putting these people into office anymore. Whether it's Republican or Democrat, it's just terrible. And the garbage tax, you know, I'm 66 years old. I'm probably going to lose my property. Where is this going to end? We got John Keane making what? I don't know, $5,000, $10,000 a week. We got Mayor Delaney making $10,000 a week. Where is the public input on all of this? Thank you, Melissa.
Eric, thank you for
Yet
the call.
Yet there's many the person who walks into the voting booth, and even though they know they're backing a loser, their moral decision is, I will vote for this person I support because that's my vote. I cast it no matter, even if I know they're not going to win. It's just that's your public voice.
Right. I do appreciate his call, although I'm sorry to hear he's that disgusted with the process. And he did mention the pension issue. We do need to talk about that for a moment. The Times Union reports this week a hard-fought proposal to change the cost of living adjustments for police and firefighter pensions will probably slow the rise in pension payments that officers are getting standing to receive in retirement. An analysis by the Pew Charitable Trusts calculates that the change could save taxpayers $95 million in pension costs over a 30-year period. Should be good news to a caller like Eric, who's outraged about some of these costs. There is a window in sight to conclude this pension deal, AG, with hopefully some positive resolution.
There is a window, but the window is closing quickly. You know, there are calls for a state investigation of the Police and Fire Pension Fund. These calls have been echoed by Clay Yarborough. Other people on council support it. You know, people, you know, see an opening here to basically, you know, settle the longstanding beef about, public pensions by having a state investigation to handle something that, you know, hasn't been handled successfully on a local level. The Police and Fire Pension Fund sent back their edits of the deal that, you know, council ratified last year. And it remains to be seen what council will do with it. But, you know, the more edits, the more back and forth, the less goodwill there is.
And it's been such a busy news week that and such serious topics that we always try to leave the roundtable with at least a little bit of a smile. So finally, it's our weekly roundup of the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from across the Sunshine State. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Now, only in Florida do drug dealers advertise their line of work on their clothing. Yes, 50-year-old John Balmer of Spring Hill was nabbed by police at a Kmart Monday because he was wearing a black t-shirt that read, "Who needs drugs?" Below that, it said, "No, seriously, I have drugs." A deputy saw Balmer try to hand a bag of a green leafy substance to the person behind him in the checkout line. They discovered it held marijuana and methamphetamine. Balmer declined to speak after his arrest, but perhaps a t-shirt really is worth 1,000 words.
Wow. Now that's what I call a blue light special.
Only in Florida do people arrested during traffic stops refuse to give their name, instead telling officers they are a sovereign citizen. The 39-year-old man was standing at an intersection in Crestview when told he was obstructing traffic. He wouldn't give ID. He said he was a sovereign citizen. When police detained him, he told officers his first name was Civil Rights, the last Constitution.
Now he's a jail citizen.
Yes. And finally, only in Florida do people reporting Bigfoot sightings refer to the mythical creature as the skunk ape. Yeah, there's been another one. 66-year-old John Rodriguez says he was fishing on the Hillsborough River near Tampa when he came upon an incredible sight. Rodriguez claims to have seen and photographed in a completely clear image that tall, hairy, elusive creature seen across North America that goes by the names Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or Yeti. In Florida, of course, we call him the skunk ape, supposedly because of the extremely pungent odor he gives off. You can look at the photo Rodriguez took. It's up on the website, The Huffington Post, and judge for yourself.
I used to work with that guy. I think he's in the sports department at OTU.
You know, only in Florida does WJCT, WJXT, and the Times Union clear its office to look at the snow.
That's true.
Because everybody was posting photos, including David Luckin, looking like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it's snowing. I saw that photo.
It's been quite a news week, and I can't think of a better foursome to break it down for us. John Burr, Fred Matthews, Dan Scanlon, and A.G. Gankarski. Guys, thank you, and have a good weekend.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
And finally, this hour, what does the worst urban fire in the history of the Southeast U.S. have in common with the Jacksonville Landing? In a word, opportunity. Our commentator Jay Solomon explains in today's edition of With All Due Respect.
Within 2 weeks of the great fire that gutted 146 blocks of downtown Jacksonville in 1901, reconstruction was underway. Architects, drawn by the blank canvas the smoldering ashes represented, came to town and created the future. Leading the charge was Henry John Clutho, a proponent of the prairie style emerging from the Midwest. Bold new structures emerged. Many notable examples of Clutho's buildings still exist, including City Hall, the Morocco Temple, and the Clutho Apartments in Springfield. Fast forward 113 years. Now, I'm not suggesting Jacksonville's downtown resembles the devastation after the fire. Just the opposite, really. What we have is a city on the cusp of remarkable change because of all the great projects moving forward. Consider Hemming Plaza improvements, the redevelopment of the Hayden Burns Library, and the opening of the Sweet Pete's Complex in the repurposed Seminole Club building. There are new restaurants, pubs, clubs, the Laura Street Trio, built following the fire, and including the Clutho-designed Bisbee building, are coming back to life. Plans are in the works for the long-dormant Shipyards property on the North Bank and the former J.E. Power Station site on the South Bank, and core urban neighborhoods are exploding with activity. There's incredible potential, and one big question mark. The centerpiece on the river, the underutilized, often maligned Jacksonville Landing. Nearly a year ago, the city and developer Tony Sleeman were talking about complete demolition and new construction. However, designs unveiled in late summer were attacked as uninspiring for this unique location, and planning halted abruptly. But as the year ended, a new approach was emerging. A design firm with experience in urban riverfront design is to be selected to work on concepts for the property. After years of struggles, that's great news. It's akin to the burned-out heart of the city after the 1901 fire, a tremendous opportunity to create new and compelling icons for the heart of the First Coast. Remember when the current Hyatt Regency Riverfront opened as the Adams Mark in 2001? Disappointment reigned. Architecturally, it had all the charisma of a 20-year-old warehouse, a missed opportunity. We must not miss with this one. Imagine the possibilities. Actually, I'm raising my hand because I have an idea to consider from another urban waterfront, Reykjavik, the capital of Iceland. Located where the North Atlantic and Arctic Oceans meet, Iceland is a big volcanic island about the size of Pennsylvania with a small population, roughly 320,000 people, about 500,000 fewer than the city of Jacksonville. Icelanders had desired an opera house for more than 100 years before construction finally got underway on the Reykjavik waterfront in 2007. In a country beset by daily volcanic activity and earthquakes, the facility, known as Harpa, was clad in exterior walls of glass. But it was a financial earthquake, the economic collapse of 2008, that broke the project.
There was talk of abandoning HARPA, but the national and local governments took over the financial load in 2009, and construction finished in 2010. The Observer of London called HARPA a wonderfully brazen emblem of Iceland's refusal to sacrifice culture in the face of crisis. It is an incredible signature building which soars like a wave while reflecting the sea and the sky in its oddly shaped and multicolored glass facets. As the light changes, HARPA changes. Sometimes we see the interior. Sometimes it projects reflections of Reykjavik. At night, it wraps itself in a cape of lights. Iceland is a country of astounding beauty, accented by almost continuous variations in light and weather. HARPA embodies all of that. Visitors see an iconic building, but as they look at it and through it, they see Iceland. Why would a larger, richer, blossoming city like Jacksonville want or accept anything less? I'm not saying copy HARPA, but certainly what we see when we look down Main Street to the St. John's should reflect our community's vitality and spirit. With all due respect, I'm Jay Solomon.
Jay Solomon is a retired broadcast executive and a WJCT volunteer, and you can read the complete transcript of Jay's commentary today. It's up on our website at WJCTnews.org and generating lots of comments, so take a look. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. The show's producer is Sean Birch. Jim Weeks answered phones today. The show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchik. And if you've got feedback about the show, we always want to hear it. Just drop us an email at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Next on the Diane Rehm Show, a panel of journalists joins Diane for analysis of the week's top national news stories. That roundtable is next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday with the latest on the worldwide outrage after terrorist attack and kill satirist writers at the French weekly Charlie Hebdo. The fallout from that and the fight against extremism, that story is Monday. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.